You're listening to the Asia Geopolitics Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Putz, coming to you from a very rainy and humid Washington, D.C.
And this is your co-host, Ankit Panda, coming to you from the Catskill Mountains in upstate New York, where it is also quite rainy today, Katie.
Well, we have a moody topic, maybe. Today, dear listeners, we are going to be discussing Bangladesh and what's been happening in Bangladesh over the last month or so, and the geopolitical consequences and context for that. I'm going to give a little bit of a rundown of what's happened. We've been covering this since sort of these protests started in early July. We have some journalists in Bangladesh who have been filing some really great reports from there, as well as our usual wonderful writers here at The Diplomat. But in early July, university students in Bangladesh took to the streets primarily to protest a recent reinstatement of a quota system for government jobs. It had been abolished in 2018 after a series of protests that year. Under that quota system, 56% of entry-level government positions were reserved for specific classes of people. And the largest quota was 30% for the children and grandchildren of 1971 freedom fighters, which was not everybody in Bangladesh. Not everybody could qualify under that quota. So there's a lot of frustration in Bangladesh because of this quota. A lot of university students, even with a good education, couldn't get good government jobs. This quota, critics said, sort of also served to prioritize those with close ties to the Awami League, which is led by Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina, who has recently resigned and fled the country. Back in 2018, Hasina had supported the demands of protesters to abolish the quota system, but this time around, she really dismissed the protesters. On July 14th, she made a comment which I think ended up being sort of the nail in the coffin. It really inflamed the movement. She questioned why they had so much resentment towards freedom fighters, and she called them razakars, which I have since learned is a pejorative term in Bangladesh. It refers to people who supported the Pakistani military during the Bangladesh independence war in 1971. The student protesters sort of seized upon the term and some of the chants that came out after that, one of which I do want to repeat, which is, who am I? Who are you? Razakar, Razakar. Who said that? Who said that? Autocrat, autocrat. And the protest movement quickly sort of morphed into more than being about this quota and being about Bangladesh's democracy, about autocracy, about Sheikh Hasina's control of the country. And so that the protests continued in mid-July. There was a government crackdown on the protests. The early reports, six students had been killed earlier in July. And then over one weekend in mid-July, 200 people were reportedly killed. That number the following weekend escalated to 400. We don't know exactly how many because a lot of this is dependent on hospital counts. Not everybody's taken to a hospital. Either way, by August, really, the death knell had been sounded. On August 5th, Sheikh Hasina fled the country as protesters stormed her residence. And it really brought an abrupt end to her 15 years in power. For listeners who maybe don't follow Bangladeshi politics, they had an election in January. She was reelected in January, and now she's out. She has fled to India. I'm not certain if she's gone on to a third country yet, but is probably looking for options. And obviously, this has serious consequences for Bangladesh domestically, but there are some really interesting geopolitical angles for us to explore. Ankit, do you want to sort of start diving into the geopolitical aspects of this?
Yeah, no, thanks, Katie. That was a really helpful rundown of what we've been seeing. I think with the change in government and particularly Hasina's departure, I think a lot of comparisons are being drawn to the Arab Spring. We've already started seeing some in Chinese state media allude to color revolutions, implying that what has taken place in Bangladesh might be the machinations of the United States. India, of course, is the obvious country to take a particular interest, given India's traditional support of the Awami League and Sheikh Hasina. New Delhi has basically seen the Awami League as a stabilizing force, and particularly treated the Awami League as something, as potentially the only thing that stands between Bangladesh remaining somewhat secular, even if it does so under an autocratic leader, versus becoming potentially more Islamist in character, which India views as a potential security threat. Meanwhile, I think if you look at what's being said in the Indian press, there's quite a bit of paranoia really seems like the right word about whether this was orchestrated by Pakistani intelligence or Chinese intelligence or even the United States in some cases. There's a lot of anxiety about attacks on Bangladesh's substantial Hindu minority. There's about 14 to 15 million Hindu citizens of Bangladesh that have been perceived to be particularly aligned with the Awami League. But there's been a fair degree of misinformation as well in the Indian press, sort of emphasizing these kinds of attacks. And so the geopolitical implications of this, I think, will become known in the coming months and weeks. It's very difficult to sort of tell at this inflection point. I think the place to maybe start our discussion, Katie, is just talking about stability, right? So as you noted, Sheikh Hasina fled the country just a few days before we were recording this podcast. Muhammad Yunus, the Nobel laureate who made a bit of an enemy of himself with Sheikh Hasina, has now returned to Bangladesh. He was apparently at the Olympics, but he's widely regarded as one of Bangladesh's most cherished kind of figures. I mean, for his role in alleviating poverty in the country by innovating microlending in particular. But Yunus has already emphasized that his chief goal is to unite the country, to project an image of stability, stability to India, to China, to the world at large. Whether he can do that, it might be too early to say, but I think one of the more encouraging factors at this point, at least, appears to be the fact that the Bangladeshi military supports Yunus, and there is a cooperative relationship there. The big question mark is how will supporters of the Awami League and potentially Hasina and her son, who is increasingly taking a more prominent role, potentially affect these dynamics. So Bangladesh might not be out of the woods just yet, but I think broadly we are looking at a new start for the country that is going to have implications for many of the countries I just named.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely as these events were unfolding in July, there was a lot of conversation already about the wider implications of what was happening in Bangladesh. For example, India, China, both sort of said this is an internal matter, which is very classic diplomatic language for don't ask me about it until something has happened that I can say something about. But I think India's perceived backing of Hasina has generated some of that ill will. At the same time, you know, interestingly, in early July, Sheikh Hasina was on a trip to China when mm-hmm. she actually returned to Bangladesh early. At the time, reporting said that, you know, she was actually upset Beijing was failing to deliver sort of financial support that she was seeking. So there was some tension in that relationship. But you're absolutely right. You know, both India, China, are taking a cautious sort of approach for China in particular. There's both sort of peril and promise, as one of our authors wrote it in a recent article. There's an opportunity here for China to have more influence over whatever government comes about in Bangladesh after this point. But there's also the same kind of perils that India sees in the, you know, the possibility of a more Islamist forward government. And then I think we also maybe need to touch on, you know, the Awami League and the Bangladesh Nationalist Party for a very long time sort of traded power back and forth and have different styles, but both of which are a little bit autocratic. And so it seems from at least reporting that's talking to protesters and protest leaders, they're not really interested in either of these parties having power again. Now, of course, these parties want to have power again. So we'll see how that unfolds. But, you know, there's an opportunity here for something new to emerge in Bangladesh. But again, how that comes about is unclear. There is an interim government. I think it's like a panel of 17. Muhammad Yunus was sworn in sort of shortly before we recorded this as the head of that. It's unclear how long that will last for. Obvious reasons, the BNP really wants there to be new elections within 3 months because they're the only organized political force really in the country. And so it's an opportunity for them. The protesters want this transition period to last longer. So we'll see what they ultimately decide. And I think that does provide space for influence, which we're seeing in sort of Indian media and Chinese media, sort of trying to adjust what the narrative of these protests are. I do think it is always important to go back to the reality that these protests started because of domestic issues in Bangladesh. They have international implications, but I always cringe when sort of the misinformation and disinformation efforts really steal the agency of the protesters
who exactly
came out to protest these things. Obviously, there's room for influence and nudging at the corners, but at the core of this is something that the Bangladeshi youth wanted and pushed for.
Yeah, I mean, the South Asia, I think, is no stranger to conspiratorial thinking anytime we see these kinds of major political movements. The color revolution logic that's so popular in China, Russia, and other places does seem to also permeate. And so I think we're seeing a little bit of this in India. You know, I think one of the big questions for India is going to be the question of border security, right? So there are sort of domestic Indian dynamics here that are particularly interesting, right? The Indian state of West Bengal, just adjacent to Bangladesh, is controlled by Mamata Banerjee, who's not had a great relationship with Narendra Modi and the BJP. She's implied since the crisis broke out and Hasina left Bangladesh that she will comply with New Delhi, I mean, the central government, in sort of ensuring that the border can be tightened. But the other thing that's going to be sort of a flashpoint internally in India's decision-making is going to be, will Narendra Modi decide and the BJP that India has an obligation to protect Bangladesh's Hindu minority? And will that sort of result in selective entry of refugees into India? I don't know just yet. I think it's still early days, but some of these issues are already becoming flashpoints in the Indian discussion about what New Delhi ought to be doing about this particular situation, right? I mean, I think for India too, I think the last half decade, I would say, in the region has been really disconcerting. If you look at Pakistan, Nepal, now Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, the Maldives, India's neighborhood has been no stranger to these kinds of domestic political crises, really evolving in ways that end up having national security implications for New Delhi. And I think Bangladesh is going to be really, really acute in that sense. I mean, it's a hugely populous country with a long history with India, and I think that's really going to be an important challenge. All right, Katie, I think we'll leave it there today, given all the uncertainties that we've identified. We'll probably return to this topic soon. I want to thank our listeners for listening as always, and make sure you subscribe so you can keep up with future episodes of the podcast. And if you have been a subscriber for a while, but you haven't yet left us a review, please do that anywhere you get your shows. We really do appreciate that. Like we said, this was a fairly short episode, but we will be back to take a look at Bangladesh and what comes next. Thanks for listening.